Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
Okay, I think we're going to get started. We don't have a moderator, so I'm going to serve that role as well. I'm going to introduce myself and also remind you, let me turn this down, remind you to fill out the evaluations for this, for our future planning for EDUCAUSE. That's very important, so I appreciate that. If you have to leave early, that's understandable. I know some of you have to catch flights. I have to give you each credit for being here on a Friday morning because some think the conference is over, but not today. Because I'm going to inspire you and hopefully do some mentorship and to learn something. So I'm going to make this very dynamic if we can. Again, I'm Jim Jarson. I'm the Director of Academic Technology Services, and that name is about a month old, versus Academic Technology Services. We've been going through a reorganization, which I'm sure most of you have experienced it or touched it in some way. And when people say, Jim, what do you mean by avoiding your IT house of cards? Well, we're trying to create an enterprise that doesn't fall apart very easily. We're going to make it strong. And that's the whole preset of what we're going to talk about today. So this is our house of cards. There's IT on top. We have a wide variety of people who are involved with our organization. We have good employees. We have challenging employees. We don't have bad employees. And I'm going to show you some techniques to eliminate those challenging employees and hopefully make you a more stronger organization, a stronger manager. Now, one of the things I want to talk a little bit about is, has anyone ever heard of Brian Berg? I just came across this individual. He's a world champion card stacker. Well, that's kind of interesting. And I did some research on this young man, and what I'm going to show you is a very short video clip, because I like rich media. I don't like just talk and have bullet points. I want to engage you today. And what I want you to do is think about your organization. He's going to talk about building a footprint. He's going to talk about making it effective. There's a beautiful part of the organization, and there's an ugly duckling part of the organization. He's going to talk about the magic and the details. Sometimes we think about the devil in the details. He's talking about the magic of the details, and he wants you to imagine what's possible. So think about your own organization and how it relates to what he does as a card builder. So let me show you this short clip. I think you'll see what I mean.
I don't remember my first house of cards. Later in life, it kind of found me and quite honestly hijacked my entire life. And I find myself doing this all the time, it seems like. Gets a pretty strange phone calls these days. I'm Brian Berg, the card stacker. I'm going to spend the next 3 days of my life building the Rhode Island State Capitol building out of about 22,000 playing cards. No tape, no glue, all cards freestanding, just one card on top of another. So I'm about a couple hours into this, and I've basically drawn a footprint. And now is when I stand here for hours and stare at it, thinking about what the most efficient and also the most beautiful way of doing it would be. So I literally build the whole building in my head, and then I start working. I think most of the time I tell people that I'm a card stacker, they think that has something to do with gambling or counting cards or something like that. The moment I knew that I had found something incredible, I discovered this honeycomb pattern, which I use extensively to this day. That day, I built to the ceiling in my parents' house, and it was such a breeze. I couldn't even believe that it worked so well. I thought, wow, I'm really on to something here. The Rhode Island State House, I wouldn't call it a terribly difficult or tricky building structurally. It's difficult because classical and neoclassical buildings have these fine proportions that make them really sing. And they also trick you as a viewer. You know, if I get down real low and look up at it, the dome's going to look really kind of small compared to the rest of the building. If I look at it from head on, it's going to look like an oversized growth. How does the average Joe out there, what's their visual memory of this thing? Every project has a long, ugly duckling stage. Some of the most time-consuming, least exciting work that I'll do really won't pay off visually for a long time. It's hard for me as, you know, the worker bee to kind of keep building this hive, looking at it and thinking, man, it's ugly. And then after a while, I'm like, whoa, it's starting to come together. And then I get this new energy that allows me to, like, really rock through it. Magic's in the details, and those don't happen until later. A lot of people will walk up to me, and the first thing they'll say is, I'm going to knock that down, or what would you do if I did this? And I somehow wonder if I were sitting here painting oil on canvas, no one would walk up to me and say, what if I, you know, squirted ketchup all over your painting, or what if I put a knife through your canvas? No one would even think of that. People are sort of intuitively drawn towards destruction. They like to see things begin. They like to see things end. I think that that notion is as old as the whole sort of idea of a house of cards. That's what that even means. I think people feel like they're kind of being ripped off, or that I'm trying to swindle them in some way if they don't get a chance to see that proof of the reality of this, which is the destruction of it. In my effort to kind of give them that, I also sort of celebrate that myself, because I really do enjoy destroying them. And I also learn a lot when I knock these things down. I actually am really taking notes on what the structure does when different things are imposed upon it. So each time I build something bigger and tear it down, it makes me have a bit more guts, I guess, is what I'm saying. People have all different kinds of reactions to what I do and my work. There's one group of people that think that I'm totally wasting my life away, that I'm not contributing to society in any way, shape, or form. And the other camp thinks that this is the most brilliant, unbelievable, beautiful, sort of telling thing. People will say to me, you made this impossible thing so possible by just playing with it. Imagine what else is possible. And that's what I take from it. I think, well, you know, there's got to be a cure for cancer. There's got to be that stuff out there, because we just haven't played with it long enough.
Okay, now you know who Brian is. You see some similarities potentially about your organization, the House of Cards? Do you have those challenging employees that's willing to destroy what you've built so beautifully? So what I want to take you through is some ideas as far as positions that you have in your department. And this is one of the more common ones you're aware of. How many CIOs do we have here? Okay, almost a third of you. Excellent. Let me kind of take this apart, CIO. When people look at, when your employees look at CIO, when administrators look at CIO, they think of chief. Let's take the chief off, because sometimes it raises to a level that people don't like to identify with. The other part is officer. Some people think, oh, that's a suit. Nobody has a suit in here, or a couple. Let's take that off. And so what are we left with information, basically, right? And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to use technology to impart information to the administration, to our students, to our parents, to our staff. So that's the key that we have. And when we look at this, I'm going to give you a little different perspective about six things that I want you to think about as a CIO, as a director of IT, of a library, or as a traditional staff person in IT. How many times have you been in strategic planning? You know what? We need a better IT structure. We need to have what? Better communication. What a surprise. We talk about this over and over again, and we rarely get it right. So I want to talk a little bit about how we can improve our communication. We want to exchange thoughts and opinions, but how could we really do a better job? We talk it, but do we walk it? The other thing I want you to think about is something that we hear a lot about, and that is teamwork. We need to work as a team, be a group, and be successful. Have you been in an organization where you have a kind of a dysfunctional group and there's one really good manager over here, and they plump that manager in there and they think, this is going to solve our problems? The good manager will get disillusioned. The people who are disenchanted already won't listen to the manager you put in that position. Just moving people around doesn't always create success. We have to understand what teamwork really means. The other thing we hear a lot about is advocacy sometimes. Are you an advocate for your employees? Are you an advocate for technology? Are you an advocate for what faculty need? Ever thought about that? Another type we look at through what we do as far as a CIO or an IT person, leadership. What does leadership mean? It's not management. It's to inspire people. Maybe by example do a better job. So we need to understand these terms. What does leadership really mean? We're guiding people. We're directing. Is it your vision? Or is it our vision? There's a big difference with that. Something else I think is important that we don't hear enough about is empathy. Jim, that doesn't mean too much with technology. It certainly does. Do you have an empathy for your employees? Do you have empathy for your faculty members? When you're in a classroom and a faculty member says, you know what, we don't have wireless today, and the network person says, well, it works fine in that hallway. And we did a project called Project Technology. How many have ever seen Project Runway, the fashion show? We did a takeoff on our campus. We followed faculty members, five faculty members in a semester. Now, we didn't vote them off because they couldn't teach. We voted them off because they didn't get the support. And we documented, the cameraman were in the classroom, and the faculty member turned to the cameraman and said, you know what, I want everybody to know that wireless does not work today. We showed that to our administration. We showed that at EDUCAUSE 1 year. And people said, you know what, Jim, this is the first time we've understood this versus a white paper or someone on a PowerPoint talking about why there are problems in IT. We don't show them. So let's have empathy for these different situations. Something else that we don't hear enough about is mentorship. And what do I mean by that? If you have an employee who's not doing a good job or something that he or she should not doing, does the other employee say, I'm going to help you out, Joe. I'm going to help you out, Sue. Maybe next time you shouldn't do this. I've been in a real-life situation once where someone was posting something on Facebook about they didn't like their job. That's kind of an innocuous statement, but maybe you probably shouldn't put that on Facebook. Did an employee say, you know what, John, maybe you shouldn't do that? No. And so that's why you talk about this house of cards. You have to have strong mentorship to be successful. Care about the employee next to you, because if you don't, you will not be successful. So these are the kind of the words I want you to think about as we go through this today. Teamwork, communication, leadership. But not just use those terms. What do they really mean in your organization? These are some of the key concepts I'm going to talk about today. And I'm going to add to the list I've already showed you. And I want you to remember this list, because down further you'll see after empathy a word called failure. I would imagine some of us have had failures, right? How come those aren't raising your hand? You haven't had failures? That's better. Good. We're going to show what you can learn from failure. It's not a bad thing. We're talking about structure and some strategies to work with your stakeholders, because sometimes we forget about those stakeholders that we're supposed to serve. Let me show you some examples. These are real-life examples, success stories. This is a meeting that looks like it's kind of collaborative. What it is planning a learning commons, and who at the table there are some system people, librarians, technical staff, consultants, and they're meeting at an architectural firm to talk about a learning commons. Why is this successful? I'll tell you why. First of all, how do you start a learning commons? You don't use a computer, you use a scratch pad. I do a lot of work in learning space design, so this is a good example of collaboration. This is how it started. It didn't start with a digital image of anything. It's just someone writing on some paper. This is where the staff will be. This is where the public will be. From here, this is where we go next, where the flow of a library might be. And I thought maybe we should do a rendering of what the library will look like, because the staff doesn't understand it, the administration doesn't, and potential donors don't understand it. After they did this drawing, someone stepped up with $1.9 million for the project. It's kind of a nice little thing. IT people don't always think about these things. Then we define the space, we develop what it's going to look like, we start building it. It's a remodel of the Goldemeyer Library in University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, where it is. And from there, it created this. And as you see there, it's a dynamic environment for a remodel. Students love it. Faculty love it. The staff love it. And the reason why it was successful is a very simple principle. I learned something from their campus planner. And at each meeting, he would say, who should be here today that wasn't here yesterday? Have you ever built a project or a building that you weren't part of around the table? And why is that? Because people don't understand the importance of dynamics, of collaborative planning. These people were all on the same page. It was not a house of cards, and it was supremely successful. So you're in that little red seat there, and the trick is, how do you get that table? Well, first of all, You need to delegate someone at your meetings to ask that very important question. Who should be here today who was not invited yesterday? Now, I'll tell you, in that meetings we had, there was one day they said, we should have the custodial staff here. What a novel idea. We should have a student here today. Do you typically put students on your planning committees? If you don't, it's a problem. If you do, excellent. You're ahead of the game. How many times have you seen a campus say, administratively, we need a new website, and so let's have a planning meeting? So who's at the planning meeting? People who are 40, 50, and 60 years old. And you know what? We're going to design a website for people who are 18 to 24. It doesn't work. We don't get the right people on the table, and that's something I want to take back, want you to take back with you when you leave today, when you get on your plane. Find and choose your advocates. Who's going to help you? Many times you can't do this alone. Sometimes maybe you should be the silent partner. Have other people speak for you. Have faculty speak for you. Someone asked earlier, are you going to talk about faculty governance? Absolutely. Because faculty can be some of the best advocates for you. Choose, but choose wisely. You may have remembered that from a movie from Indiana Jones. Okay, be passionate, but don't be too passionate. Some people are afraid of people who have energy. So be careful. Know when to throttle it down, slow it down. Have other people do some of the talking for you. Simple word, collaborate. Get the right people at that table. And it's okay to lead. And when you lead, don't always lead that, well, I have an idea, I have a vision. When people say, I have a vision, the warning flag should go off. Because they can have an agenda. Okay, leadership skills. These are some of the things that I think are important to take with you today when you go leave today and you're in a leadership position. Follow these. Be honest. Have a vision, but don't make it just your vision. Obviously, I hope you're all competent. Inspire people. In our position, many times we use a lot of rich media in our presentations. I did a program on a student for our Board of Regents about how she was in a foster home, orphanages. She had like 5, 6 foster homes until before she was 18 years old. One foster home locked all the refrigerators, all the cameras, and controlled her, medicated her. Got pregnant, had an autistic child, and she didn't know what to do. She went back to school, got her degree, she's a veterinarian today. We told that story in 5 minutes. And every time we show it, people are crying. And if there's a trademark we have at our campus in video, we will make you laugh or cry in 5 minutes. And if you don't believe me, afterwards I'll show you some resources you can use for free in your own university of how you can empower people making decisions by seeing student stories. Okay? Now, Helen Chu is a Fry Institute fellow, and I met her at the Fry Institute back in 2005, and I asked her these questions. And I'm going to ask you this first. If you had the 5 most positive traits of being an effective manager, can someone give me a couple that you think these are great traits to be an IT manager? What would you say?
Integrity.
And tell me a little about that. Why do you think that's important? Excellent. One other person. I like that. One more? Yes.
Trust.
And how do you gain trust?
By being empathetic to your employees.
Oh, you use one of the E words. You know what? I like that word so well. I mentioned parting gifts, didn't I? This is directly from Wisconsin. It's the original mini cow pie. Take that with you. Give them a round of applause. Thank you. There's more where those came from, okay? Okay, let's see what Helen said here. She says, honest. Honesty, integrity is going to be something that is going to be a trait. Be open. Do you play your cards so close to the vest they don't know what you're thinking? That makes people feel uncomfortable. Are you transparent when you administrate? We use that word in politics. I'm a transparent politician. There's no such thing. But you can be a transparent IT manager. She talks about transparent, being up front, putting your cards on the table. I didn't tell her to say that. I think that was great. Instead of holding them close to your vest. Okay? She talks about trust that was brought up. Excellent. And ability to trust people. And team building. Excellent points. Then I asked Helen something a little bit more difficult. What about ineffective management? What are the traits of those type of individuals? Anyone? Yeah. What's that?
Incompetent.
Oh, how do you deal with an incompetent person?
Well,
just listen to them. Let them be themselves.
Show their traits. There are sometimes, what is your first name?
Mike.
There are sometimes that you'll find you'll spend 80% of your time with incompetent people, 20% with people who know what's going on. The dilemma is there are going to be times where you have to cut your losses and move on. It happens. It may be a situation where you cannot fire or lay off or not renew an employee, but there are times, exactly what Mike said, you look for those competent people, you may be stuck with them, and that's a challenge in the IT organization. She says that. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, one more. Yeah. Well, I've never had that experience. No. you can do everything right in the world in IT, and it won't come out when you want it. The trick is the cycle, and this is what you learn. Can you last the cycle where you are? If you're in your job for 15 years at the same institution, I encourage you not to be. And that might seem contrary to what you might think, because what happens is that people develop perceptions about you. Or you may have someone who wants to stay at an institution for a long time, and it's a weight game. Can you outweight incompetence? And I know that happens. The trick is, what do you want? Define your niche. There's no silver bullet or magic card to get around that. Is define your niche, you're successful. The last feature presentation, he talked about, we had a kind of a discussion afterwards, and we asked that question, what do you do when you have incompetence, but you have a great idea? And his response was to work under the radar. Which, well, gee, that's kind of difficult, but it's what's making you happy in what you do. Maybe it's presenting at EDUCAUSE. Maybe it's in a project that's successful on campus that you have to kind of avoid the incompetent circle. I wish there was a better answer, but the reality of the world, you're going to run into it, and you could work for an incompetent administrator for 10 years. The question for each of you is, do you want to wait 10 years? Or do you find that niche somewhere else? Maybe it's working with faculty closer. Maybe it's developing a project that makes you exciting. There's no magic answer, but it's a great question. Thank you. This is what she says. Do you have people that drive their own agendas or are overly aggressive and dictatorial? You don't have to raise your hands if you have experienced that. But you can nod your head. I can see you. No one else will see you. Okay. She also says this. People create division between people, often times operating the principles of, and this is what she lists, fear, uncertainty. All we have to fear is fear itself. You probably remember that from the FDR. And doubt. Don't play with people's minds if you want to be an effective manager. What about, how do you create an IT manager, create an effective work environment and avoid a house of cards? I'm going to have Helen answer that because I think it's a good answer. Put your cards on the table. Don't be so afraid to share what you have. Obviously, you can't share personnel issues, but share where you're going. And there are administrators that do that. There are different dynamics at play in education today. Who is the most important person at your campus today? President? Chancellor, students, yes, that's correct. But in today's economy, who's the number one person? Yep, exactly right, Mike. CFO. It's an unspoken truth. They're the ones controlling the purse strings. Okay, students. Thank you for bringing that up. It's more than millennials. These are students that we are working with. You probably know about the Beloit College Mindset List. Those who graduate in 2010, their email is their text messaging. Google is a verb, and most have never used a postage stamp. These are the students going to graduate in 2010. So remember that. Stakeholders. Let me move on. Keep us on track here. These are the people you have to work with at each of your campuses. How do you deal with them? Okay. Let me go through them. This guy, the senior professor. He is barely on Web 1.0, but he's a stakeholder. How do you get them into the conversation? The next obvious group is this couple here, the younger professors. They're on Web 2.0. She's probably thinking about Web 4.0. You have two very diametrically opposed types of stakeholders. How do you deal with them? when you have building projects, you have aspiring architects to come to your campus, don't you? He's a stakeholder. She's a stakeholder. Who is looking out for your IT needs? Have you ever had an architect to come to your campus, have a great vision for your campus? Be wary. The warning flags. Who is your ombudsman or ombudsperson on your campus countering what they'd like to do? Because their number one product is something that will live for centuries. That's their statement. There's very good architects. There's architects with agendas. Same thing with maybe a campus planner. How many have built bricks and mortar and the technology was secondary? That's way too many people. If you're building a $40 million building and you're not at the table, it's a big problem. And that will knock your house of cards down as well. And getting back to working in incompetent situations, you want to be 10 years and looking at a $50 million building you had hardly any input in? That happens way too much. What about a project? We'll use an architectural project. A dean walking down the hallway with a set of blueprints. That could be kind of dangerous sometimes. You're kind of snickering. I've seen that happen many times because I have a dream. And it doesn't include you. Because deans do leave positions to go to other positions. How do you fit into that structure? The people who put Joe the plumber, Joe the electrician. These are your stakeholders. They don't work on your campus. They might work on your campus, but they're attuned to what you can succeed in your projects. Do you have any of these people? Networking people, maybe, make my day. These are priorities. How do you deal with these individuals? We'll talk about that. The students, again, thanks for mentioning that. We forget about the students many, many times in administrative decisions. What about the students who are going to graduate in 2012, 2015? What's going to be on their plate? We have to prepare for those people now. And then I can't forget each of you. You're a stakeholder in this, and typically you're smartly dressed. What is your role in this whole enterprise? Now, these are the fun things about turn of a friendly card, if you remember Alan Parsons' project, for those who have gray hair. I frost mine, so. But anyway, showfish can be wild. That's your trouble employees. Do you have a full house? A full house of good employees. Do you know when to fold your cards? Cut bait, move on to the next project. What suits you the best? Is everything coming up spades? Now, playing cards can be fun. There's 52 of them in the deck, right? Plus the jokers. Now, I'm not a card dealer or a magician or anything like that. But what I can do is I can do psychic cards. Now, think of these cards as all your employees. And I'm going to come up to you because I asked you to come to the first row, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm going to do is something really simple. I want you to tell me when to step. I'm going to have a deck of cards. There's nothing special about it. It's a real deck. Nothing up my sleeves, right? What I want you to do is, what is your name?
Shoring.
I want you to tell me to stop. It's whenever you want me to. And I'm going to pick a card out that I want you to look at.
Stop.
Right there. Now, I want you, everyone, you got it? Everyone look at that card. Do you see it? I don't see it. I'll put it in the deck. Now, I want you to think about that card for a second, each of you. You're thinking about that card? You're not thinking. You got it? Now, I'm going to think about what that card means. Is it a good employee? Is it a challenging employee? Is it an administrator? Oh, there's a card there. That's on purpose. And you've got to think about that deck of cards. Are you thinking about that card still? You're thinking about it, right?
Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go through this deck, and I don't know if I'll be able to pick it out. Do you think I'm going to be lucky here? It's not this card. It's not that card, but I bet you it's this card. Is that right? Nine of Hearts? Yeah. It's all about psychic. Are you a psychic as a manager? Your intuition is very important. I remember I learned an important lesson. Your instincts can really lead you down a very important path. I had an employee I was going to hire once. I'm on the phone. I'm going to hire him. I'm concerned about the budget. If I don't hire someone, I'm going to lose the position. Have you ever been in that situation? I'm on the phone and said, I'm looking for a leader. And the person on the end of the phone said, well, you know, I'm kind of a follower. And my instinct told me to do what?
Forget it.
And know what I did, Mike?
You hired.
I hired him.
Right.
Exactly. And because you answered correctly, You get a deck of cards. And these are not any inexpensive cards, too. They're official. Congratulations. Mike, excellent. Thank you.
I'm a plant.
What's that? Oh, you're a plant. Yeah, sir. Mike and I have never met before. Okay. Let's move on. Because there's some things I really want you to concentrate on here. Communication. We talk about this idea of communication. We don't do a good enough job. Let me show you some examples of what we do. We use webcasting for our classes and promotion. But I take it a step further. I use it for IT communications. Because when IT sends communications out, IT administration, you know what most people do? Delete. Exactly. Why is that? Because there's so many of them? Or what else? What do you think?
It's because most folks really aren't that interested.
Ah, exactly. That's exactly right. So what we do is something a little differently. We use webcasting. We use a product called MediaSite. We've had good luck with it. And these are some of the smatterings of what we do. We do graduation with it. If Bill Clinton comes, we record him, and we use it as a learning object because presidents don't come to your campus every day. But what a great resource for your political science department. They did not ask us to tape it, by the way. We knew it would be a resource that they'd like. So think about your stakeholders. The story about Audrey, it's called the Self-Sufficiency Program. I'll give you the resource for it. That's that five-minute video that most people will cry at. It's so inspiring about what a student can do. We use a lot of rich media. Let me show you what that looks like. We have an event called Passport to Technology. We give faculty passports to come, and if they get it stamped four times, they get some nice parting gifts, not cards, not cow pies, but DVD players, USB drives from the vendors. So this is an example of what we use. So when you get the email, this is what you get. Hello, I'm Jim Jorstad, Director of Educational Technologies, and I'd like to personally invite you to our fifth annual Passport to Technology on Wednesday, January 21st. What better way to speak to each of you than through the innovative technology of webcasting with our MediaSite system? In bringing this technology to our campus, our webcasting efforts have... So that's just one example. Let me just go here real quick, close this, okay. And let's move on here. Just give me a second to get back to where we were. What's nice about that is that it's a webcast that people like because it's something different. It isn't your traditional email. And I'll get responses, hey, Jim, great. Now, I'm not an actor, but it's nice to have your IT staff be able to talk that way. Somebody mentioned, are you talking about governance? Yeah. Let me give you an example. We went through a reorg. We have a new logo, a new vision to help advocate for faculty. So I asked the faculty senate, could I come and speak about it? Because they're nervous. Because IT reports to the CFO now. And some people think IT should report to the provost office because of the academic connection. So they let me come. So around the table are 30 senators, provost, CFO. And I spent 15 minutes explaining to faculty, we are here for you. I didn't sit at the table. I walked around the room like this and said, I'm here for you. And they were so impressed with that that an IT person would say, I'm your advocate. I'm not going to say the wireless works in the hallway and not in your classroom. I'm going to be there for each of you. And they thought that was really spectacular. What we did then was we put on a webcast. Because I can't be everywhere to each department meeting. And by sending that link out, faculty say, well, IT is trying to communicate with us. It's not an email. It's not in the newsletter. It's a video explanation about what this new unit is. So when you go through a reorg, don't send an email and say, oh, this is going to be fantastic. Because faculty are not going to get it. They don't have time to read it. They don't understand what IT does. Some do. Many do not. Many do not have the time to read about IT. We did a national teleconference for EDUCAUSE. And what we did is we linked five people together around the country. And I asked the question, what are we doing in this new economy of not much money? And Rick Holmgren from Allegheny said, you don't stop innovating when dollars are tight. That's an important message for your administration. We talk about stakeholders. That's the kind of message you want to get to these people. When you have a tight budget, is not a good time to stop innovating. Continue to innovate. Yep.
I always say don't sell the future short.
Ah, same. Excellent. I'll get yours up, Mike, next. That's excellent. I like that idea. Don't sell the future too short.
Yeah.
Excellent. Another one. This is from Helen. Develop services that are scalable, financially sound, and sustainable for the long term. Your budget officer likes to hear those type of words. Is it scalable long term? And you may have heard this from someone else. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Okay. So think about those types of things. In this case, it was great. We web streamed it. We video conferenced it. And we sent that resource to the faculty so they could watch it anytime. Highly successful. So what about getting a full house or a full deck, a good amount of employees? Let me give you another quick example. Librarians. Many times there's a division between libraries and IT. And why do you think that is?
History.
It's almost like if you go to a conference and you have a joint conference of librarians, networking people, and faculty, they typically sit all together in their own groups. They don't intersperse themselves. And there's been times where the library's got funding and IT has not. Yes, ma'am.
My library likes to say we were here first.
Oh, and they always will be. The trick is, how do you help break down that barrier? And what you do is this. They want to do a Learning Commons on our own campus. And their idea was to move the periodical shelves to create a collaborative commons. Not probably the best and most innovative way of doing it. So I invited myself to the meetings. I said, let's do something different. And so what we did is I bought a small version of what I had my vision to do. And I put it in our building to bring faculty to administrators to understand what we're trying to do. The next thing we did is we put it in the library. And they loved it so much, they keep on building on it. This is a Herman Miller Resolve system. You can kind of keep on building on it. They didn't know anything about it. Administrators didn't know anything about it. So for our $3,000 investment in our building, they have been just going crazy putting these out all over their library. And students love it. What are some of your challenges here? These are some of the words we come up with about knowing when to fold them. You can't have so much passion to your project that you lose sight of where you want to go. In other words, do you want to win the battle or do you want to win the war? That's something I want you to think about. Play your percentages, and if you have challenging employees, as we call them jokers, you may have to cut your losses as well. Now, I want to talk about failure for a little bit, and we don't talk enough about how you can learn from that. Has anyone ever heard of the Dream the Impossible series from Honda Motorworks? Has anyone heard of that? Some of you have, maybe. What I did, I talked to Honda about this, and I said, I'd really like to show a short segment on failure. And what I'm going to show you is like a 5-minute-long documentary, and it's about race car. And I'm not a race car type of guy. I'm not a poker player either. And I'm more of a psychic card player, if anything. Okay. I'll show you that trick in a little bit, by the way, if you're interested. What I want to show you is this clip about race driving. And I want you to think about that, how it affects or how it relates to your IT structure. And as you as a manager and what you'll learn from failure. So let me show this to you. I think you'll see what I mean.
People didn't want to talk to me very much after that. It was a pretty difficult time. You know, it's the last race of the year. You don't have a chance to redeem yourself. We lost the championship by 1 point, so I try to not be too hard on myself. But yes, I am very hard on myself, especially. I mean, it's something that doesn't leave your mind very, very quickly.
My failure?
No.
I almost failed out of high school twice. I had a really bad year where everything went wrong.
Oh, yeah. Everybody makes mistakes.
It broke all the bolts, and the structure basically collapsed. Well, I made a formal apology.
I can remember when I was out at the go-kart track one day. You know, you use a stopwatch and time the lap, and I kept giving myself like 1 second less. Like, okay, was that 41 seconds that time? Was that 40 seconds that time to get around? I like to be able to see the improvement, and with racing, it's very obvious. You know, I can see the direct result of my effort. We're in Homestead, Florida. This is my first IndyCar race, and there was a crash. I don't remember anything, but the car was on fire, and, you know. My brain was covering up for the fact that this was a bit of a heightened situation, that I shouldn't be aware of what's going on right now, but... I woke up in the medical center, and there was a bright light above me, and Father Bob is over here to the left, and I've got needles in my arm, and, you know, it's, so that was probably the worst moment. You're driving your car, and you feel frightened a little bit. We bump up against that feeling as much as we can to try and push that limit further and get comfortable there and then push it again. So, you know, you're constantly on the brink of crashing because that's the fastest.
So much of racing is failure.
Failure is a byproduct of pushing the envelope.
You push the envelope of performance until things fail.
When you fail, it's not necessarily looked at as a bad thing, as long as you learn from it and make something positive out of it.
Honda's not a car company. Of course, Honda started as a motorcycle company. More than anything, Honda's an engine company.
From the president on down throughout its history, it's been engineering-oriented. Engineers, for better or worse, always want to change things and advance.
これはね、もうすべてが本田総一郎の要求そのものがすべてそういうことになってます。ですから、100回トライして99回失敗してもいいんだと。本田総一郎の考え方そのものが
When Honda Performance Development first started racing in 94, the program was a massive failure.
We had a lot of engine problems, we had a lot of engine failures.
Here on lap number 10, he is making an unscheduled stop in the pit.
We blew the turbocharger off the engine in several places.
The corner workers are reporting that there's a fire in the left rear of his car.
Say 15,000 revolutions per minute. Sometimes the whole bottom end would blow out of the engine.
That's that Honda engine car, and it is in trouble now.
I mean, just blew into like a million pieces.
Could it be more trouble for a Honda engine?
In the seat, in like a 5-gallon bucket, was all these engine parts from the everything that was blown out of the bottom of the engine. I mean, there was pistons, there was con rods, or pieces of block and bearings and stuff. one of the Japanese engineers that was here on assignment was all concerned because he was afraid that there were other pieces of the engine out there on the racetrack that they failed to pick up. And he was all concerned that our competition would learn our know-how and we'd lose our confidentiality. And I'm saying, what's there to worry? I mean, there's no one would even want to know what's in our engine.
There were a lot of failures in 1994. And those failures led to a new engine in 1995.
We improved it step by step to a point where finally in 95 we won our first race, and 96 we won the championship.
Honda now is the sole supplier of engines for the IRL, or the Indy Racing League. We'd really prefer to have some competition in the series, but perhaps the Honda success drove some of them out. Maybe they'll come back.
One of my worst ideas happened the very first week I worked at Honda.
My boss said, okay, I'm going to Japan in a couple weeks, and I need proposals for new colors for all the 96 models. It's like Civic and Accord wagon. And I just completely panicked because, I mean, literally, I was asked to do more in my first week at Honda than I had done 4 years at my previous job. I really wanted to do an orange car. Really wanted to do orange. And decided, okay, 96 Civic, we're going to do orange. Really without doing my homework completely, I proposed this color. I get in this big room and it's, you know, sales, engineering, and design. It's the balance of powers where everybody makes the decisions, you know, to see what goes into mass production. And I think they're all looking at this new person, this new designer, thinking, well, maybe we should trust her. So they went ahead and they put the orange into production, and the dealers flipped. It's like, what is this hideous, hideous color? It's like, stop production of this immediately.
That's okay, right? I mean, if you've got a boss that's telling you to take a chance, and if you make a mistake or fail, you know, just try not to do it again, and try to learn from that, you know? That's a good thing.
I mean, you take chances, you know. I think everybody in that room understood they were taking a chance, but they were willing to take that chance.
I tell him, well, Edison, you know, Edison trying to do the light bulb. And he said, I never failed. It just didn't work 10,000 times. And that 10,001, it lit up. So it's, if you look at it that way, were those failures?
That makes you think about failure. Go ahead.
Aside from the well-known quote from Edison,
right,
one of my other favorites along the same lines is from the great engineer Ferdinand Porsche, which is, he who has not failed has not challenged himself.
Excellent. I love it. Around the same lines. Have we challenged ourselves? Have we admitted failure? Have we made that orange car? Have we tried to sell something we didn't know our homework? I want this to hopefully resonate to you and your IT jobs. Along with failure, how do you avoid it? Silos. Go ahead.
You do what you always do. You go back and try to figure out what worked and what didn't.
Exactly.
And you try to build on what did.
What did work. And when you look at what did, it actually has worked, how do you know that your enterprise have silos? And I came up with a list I want you to think about. If you have these, these are your symptoms you should be aware of as managers. First of all, if you have managers in your area who don't offer collaborative solutions, like, how about if we work with networking and the support desk at the same time? If you have managers who don't think that way, you have a silo. Number two, I don't have enough information. I can't collaborate. Symptom number two of a silo. I don't have any resources. I can't do my job. I don't have enough money. Do you have managers that give you options? Or do they complain that there's always a lack of resources? Potential symptom of a silo. We have no exchange of talent. In other words, I have a great networking person that I want to work in the media department, doesn't share them because they're my employee. Symptom of a silo. He did it. It was their fault. It was networking. Wireless does not work because networking doesn't do a good job. You have a symptom of a silo. And I'm from Wisconsin, so I know silos. Okay. Lack of teamwork. Do you work as a group or not? Is it dysfunctionality is created by people not wanting to be part of a group or to work as a team? Now, Wayne Brown did a survey recently. This is this month, as a matter of fact. They asked these three groups, what are the top five skills required of CEOs or CIOs? The CIO says communications number one, leadership, and down the road, higher ed knowledge last. And then they asked the administrators the same question, and they prioritized differently. They thought technical staff. So your CFO, your president wants to know that Mike knows what he's doing technically. You know what's interesting? They are less worried about leadership. Why do you think that is? Exactly. They think they do it. Okay. What about technology leaders who are not CIOs? They want someone who can lead. So when you go across this path here, remember these, because these are important things to remember about the perceptions of the people you're working with and for. I understand the face card. You need to put a face on your enterprise. If someone said, what is your IT stand for? Great service, customer service, state-of-the-art technology, try to put a face on it. Going back to the Faculty Senate situation, what I did when I addressed the faculty, I brought a new employee that was brought into my department who does the computer labs and our pay for print. Nobody knows who he is. So I brought him, so he felt like, well, Jim's bringing me to the meeting. This is pretty neat. I brought Brandon with me, and I said to the faculty members, how many people know Brandon? 2 people out of 30. Well, Brandon takes care of all of your pay for print. He takes care of all your software, makes Brandon feel good, makes the faculty members feel good, creates a good team environment. So bring employees with you to big meetings. Introduce them. Put a face on your enterprise. Now, when I say have a card up your sleeve, it works both ways. Does anyone play Hearts here? The card game Hearts? I got one up my sleeve here. This is not a very good card, is it? Oh, yeah. It's minus 13 points against you. Now, if I go into a meeting, I have a card up my sleeve, that gives me a little bit of power, doesn't it? But what about, let's go back to Mike, what if you don't have that card? Have you walked into a meeting with your ace card, hoping that it's going to get you somewhere? Just remember there's someone else in that same room that may also have that ace in the hole. So it works both ways. Outcomes of today. I want you to challenge you to think about these things. I want you to promote your collaboration. Ensure your employee satisfaction. Demonstrate your own advocacy for your employees and technology, faculty, and show some empathy for your employees. Be strategic with all those stakeholders. I showed that long list, the photographs, the senior faculty, the young faculty, the aspiring architect, all those people. Be strategic. Demonstrate your leadership. Demonstrate your values so people believe, show your hand. Learn from your failure, like the Honda demonstration I showed you earlier. It's okay to admit failure, but you've got to learn from it, obviously. Be a better communicator. Don't rely on email, especially to your stakeholders. It gets lost. Promote good teamwork. If you have good team members, bring them up and promote them. Maybe it's not a salary range increase. Maybe it's just saying, hey, great work. Now, I mentioned some resources that I have. Now, the first is our website of our new organization. I've got a blog, Campus Technology and Leadership are articles. I mentioned about some programs that you can use in your classes and your own promotion, and it's our media site catalog. We have a number of things that we've done, promotions, videos, things about IT, how to communicate with IT, we post those. So you can use them as resources for yourself. And if you say to yourself, I can't afford a media site, I can help you probably find a place to post something as a trial to show your administration what it could do. Or maybe it's another webcasting solution you have. But try to think about video email rather than just traditional email. Now, a few minutes we have remaining, questions that you have for me. Sure. What we've done is that we do some internships with our unit. We also work with international students. In the resources I'm giving you, I had a student from the Ukraine, and very dedicated, spoke kind of broken English. He was with us for 5 years. And I learned a little bit more about him, and we had a Board of Regents program where, you know, like the trustees come to your campus and learn about how great you are. Well, Vladimir had graduated and went to Ukraine. So I emailed and says, could you record some thoughts about what education meant to you? So he had his Mac, he's recording MP3 files, sending them back to me, back and forth, and I pieced them together with music. He sent me photographs of how he grew up and how poor he was. And we played that for the Regents. It was so nice because he said, I didn't realize how much people cared about me. And if it wasn't for those people in technology that cared for me, I would never be successful. He wants to be a president of the Ukraine, and he's going to get there. And it's those stories, it's 4 minutes. That's how you empower those students and raise them to a level where people know those stories. And we had five different segments for the Board of Regents, and I said to the logistical staff, I want Kleenexes at each of the tables. Well, what's this for? Just trust me. Just trust me. Everybody used them. Now, Board of Regents are not your typical. They're business people, hard-nosed, business people. But it was gratifying for myself and our administration to see people so emotional. And after we showed the program, I'm having lunch out in the student commons, a dean comes up to me, School of Business, spreadsheet mentality figures. He has trench coat on, suit on, always looks great. He doesn't ever show emotion. And he walked up to me and he said, you know, Jim, and he started to cry. I never realized the impact we have for students. That made it all worthwhile. So it's those events. If you can promote the student successes, if you get the faculty on your side, and they're your advocate, you can go pretty far. It's a great question. How about back here, who's been sitting back here? Any questions? Was this helpful for each of you? Good, good. I hope you enjoy. You've been a great audience. Fill out your evaluations, and if you've got questions, and again, I have more resources, they're yours for free.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.